one of the ways that technology and, you know, you can bring in that layer of artificial intelligence can help us all with our teams to help them feel more appreciated and understood and, you know, don't make it generic, make it really special and unique.
Welcome to the Redefining Sales podcast, where we reimagine and redefine sales in a digital world. In this new series, we have absolutely scoured the world to bring you only the best of the very best. We will be working with each of the thought leaders to unpack all of their years of experience, their pearls of wisdom, and nuggets of gold into bite-sized chunks that will enable you to redefine your sales. Welcome to the Redefining Sales Podcast. My name's Abby White. I'm the CEO of Sales Redefined and host of the Redefining Sales Podcast. Today, we bring you the absolutely phenomenal Joe Gaines, Area Vice President for ANZ Retail and Consumer Goods Group for Salesforce. Joe has a wealth of knowledge and experience that we are going to be tapping into today. Joe and I recorded this episode back in August, and I'm so excited for you to finally get your hands on it. In this conversation, we talk about the latest state of sales report from Salesforce. We talk about how Salesforce have adapted post-COVID and how they've been looking at retraining their sales team. We talk about what's the future of sales and what do you need to know. We also talk about how AI has changed the game and the change and transition towards data-driven selling. We talk about, of course, the traits for high-performance sales professionals and what does Joe look for. And then we unpack Joe's absolutely phenomenal career that she has had. This conversation is honestly so valuable. I've listened back to it multiple times because there are so many nuggets of gold in there. Now, before we dive straight into the conversation, let me tell you a little bit more about Joe and share with you a bit of her bio. So Joe Gaines has spent 20 years working for and with technology and media companies. Since 1999, she's worked with various digital-first companies and networks, including Crux, CBS, Yahoo, KidSpot, Census, and of course now Salesforce. As I mentioned, at Salesforce, Joe is the Area Vice President for ANZ for their Retail and Consumer Group, and she leads their business development and go-to-market strategy. She's a thought leader and industry advisor and has been with Salesforce for 7 years now, following the acquisition of Crux in 2016. Prior to joining Crux, she built out their APAC business. She has also done other phenomenal roles in her time, including GM of consumer brands at CBS, sales director at Yahoo 7, and CEO of digital media options. Her career and experience is just absolutely phenomenal, and that is why I'm so excited to bring this episode to you. On top of all of that, one of Joe's obsessions is studying human behavior. We have an absolute shared love and passion there of human behavior. So grab your pad, pen, tea, coffee, and get stuck into this week's episode with Joe Gaines.
Welcome to the Redefining Sales Podcast. This week, we have the amazing Joe Gaines from Salesforce, who I'm so excited to have here. Joe, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's fantastic to be here.
We are very excited about this one. And one of the reasons, I'm actually going to jump straight in because I am dying to pick your brain. One of the reasons we've been so excited is all of our team has just been consuming the most recent Salesforce report. And I believe it's 6,000 people that you went out to and sales professionals you went out to get their insights on the state of sales. And I'm kind of geeky like that, that when the Salesforce State of Sales report comes out, I get really excited. I genuinely do. So is it just me or do other people get excited?
I hope people get excited. I mean, that's why we produce it. But maybe your excitement levels are a little higher than most, Abby. But that's great. I'm glad. I'm glad you get excited.
I do. So I would love you to unpack a little bit for us, because one stat that I don't think was necessarily that surprising, but I want to unpack was, I think it was 58% of sales reps believe their job has changed forever, not just sort of temporarily following the pandemic and obviously this post-pandemic research, but they believe it's changed forever. So I'm really interested to get some of those insights from you that came out of that most recent report. Is there sort of some nuggets of gold you can share with us?
Well, I think our roles as salespeople in the past, you know, you have this vision of salesperson used to be like driving around in their, you know, their Camry with their fax machine in the back. And, you know, you could print out an order form anywhere, or you could go and find someone on their holiday and you could put an order form in front of them. And then we went into this world of lockdowns and isolation, and the role of sales changed fundamentally, and people were no longer traveling. There was no longer a lot of plane travel interstate, overseas, and so you had to get used to building relationships virtually and really learning. We've always said you need to look someone in the eye, you need to be across the table from them to build that trust. And now we've had to learn how to build trust and learn how to build relationships in a virtual world. And we've discovered that we actually can. We can do that quite well. And in fact, you know, now we have that mantra of work from everywhere. You can really work from everywhere, and you don't have to wait until you can be face-to-face with somebody. Equally, trust became even more important, and we now need to build much stronger, longer-lasting relationships with our customers. You know, we've always said that it's easier to retain, or, you know, cheaper to actually retain a customer than it is to win a new one. But now, you know, we have to work even harder to retain those customers and maintain those relationships. So that's changed as well. It's not just about new business sales. It's about how do you retain the ones that you've got.
And it's fascinating. We even found relatively early into the pandemic, we started talking to someone in the UK, and they kind of said, well, how's this going to work, you know, if we actually work and we assist them? And we ended up, I don't know what came across me, but I ended up saying, well, it's actually no different to if I was currently 1 kilometer down the road to you, because at the time the UK was all in lockdown in the do it virtually. And actually for us as a business, it was fantastic because it opened up international opportunities because no one cares where you're based. And, you know, from that perspective, we had clients, and we still do, that we've never met face to face, but it actually doesn't matter anymore. So it's actually super interesting.
Yeah, it so is. The boundaries, whilst there are new ones, it opened up ones that were, you know, existing.
So one thing that I also found really interesting from the research was that many leaders have also stated that they're not actually ready and feeling prepared to actually address some of the changes that are occurring and some of the challenges. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, look, as we just said, you know, we're in this sort of remote and distributed workforce now. And so for leaders, it's a bit of a change, right? Like how do you sort of not keep an eye on your team, but how do you keep up with what they're actually doing? And how do you create a digital first and very flexible work culture, again, with trust at the heart of it? And, you know, as leaders, it's a real shift, right? And helping your team to feel comfortable with deciding when and how and where they work. But for you as a leader, really feeling comfortable with that as well, and being able to, you know, sit with that idea that your team can still be productive and they can still be doing the right things, even if they're not sitting right next to you in the office or right across from you in the office. And I think we come back to some of those fundamentals, like, you know, I set three priorities for my team, I mean, there's lots of priorities, but I try to give clarity. And so the three priorities just in this last quarter were pipe gen, and that should always be a priority because without pipe, you know, how do we sell? Executive sponsorship, and also thought leadership, because I'm leading our retail and consumer goods industry at Salesforce. And we've decided to go down this path of having industry aligned sales teams, and it makes so much sense. We're talking the language of the customer. We're talking about supply chain constraints. We're talking, I mean, everybody is an expert on supply chain now at the moment because all consumers are impacted, yeah. But you know, really understanding trade promotion management and marketing, really understanding, you know, what's happening with the physical to digital retail. So really being able to have some depth on that is, you know, is really important. So you've got to be able to set up those fundamentals for your team to say, here's the things I need you to focus on. And thought leadership for my team, building out a new industry, really important. Have an opinion on things, comment on things, you know, put things out there, speak on podcasts, like really, you know, help your team to understand what's important in order to get the results.
Yeah.
And that hasn't changed. Sorry. That hasn't changed.
So many things there that you just sort of said that I want to tap into. So many, like the first piece you said around also the trust with the team, that's so interesting. I even found we had to come up with, well, Sales Redefined, what's the rule book for us? Because we had some people like me, I'm ex-IBM, we've always been really flexible, you know, you kind of could work from everywhere, no one gives monkeys if you're working from a coffee shop or Timbuktu, no one cares. Yeah. And you kind of really got that flexibility, and you've got other people who are more used to kind of a clocking on, clocking off 9 to 5 kind of thing. And we really had to actually readdress, hey, what's okay for us? What do we want our culture, our values? What do we want our ethos to be? All of it. And it's so interesting how it just all got thrown out the window. We got rid of our office during COVID because no one was coming into it. And so most people have actually, and we ourselves included, had to just rewrite the rule book of what is it for you. So I think that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm working from home today and my whole team. So you really need to adjust to it. And I'm someone who really loves the team being together and being in the office. I get a lot of energy from that. But also we just did some of the Myers-Briggs profiling with my team, and not everyone gets their energy from that. So that idea, you know, you've always had that flexibility. Some people are actually working better and smarter with that ability to work from everywhere.
Yeah, I agree. So I'm going to come back to some of the points you said about thought leadership later, because I really want to circle back to that. Before I do, I want to come back to sort of some of the pieces that leaders are looking at. And one thing that I saw in the research was 70% of organizations are now looking at how they retrain their field sales force and how they retrain them to sell from home. So how have Salesforce approached the retraining to sell from home?
Well, I mean, this is our heartland, right? We have tools for this. We have Trailhead, which is our online learning, which you can completely customize for your team. We have Slack, which is our digital HQ. So, you know, you can stay connected with your team. We have huddles that we can do. Video and voice huddles. We have teams that we're in around accounts or teams on Slack. So we are really fortunate that we actually have tools that we provide to customers that help them to train and upskill and keep their teams connected. And I love some of the integrations as a leader. I love some of the integrations into Slack that I can use, like Workday, to approve my team's leave, or you know, to prove their expenses in Concur. Like everything is connected, so it makes it really easy. And so, you know, using that as a platform to train and upskill and get people to, and obviously, you know, at our heart, we're a CRM business, so actually getting people to update the app is really helpful. I mean, I've worked in companies, I've worked as a sales leader and a marketing leader in companies where we haven't had a CRM. And I don't know how in, you know, this real digital first economy that we're in, we would have, you know, how do you survive and thrive if you don't have that digital record for a customer?
Yeah, and it's still fascinating how many businesses do not have any shape or form of CRM at all.
Yeah, a spreadsheet and, you know, pieces of paper. So it's there's technology. I know, you know, technology has been used in many different ways, but I think it came sort of into itself during the pandemic, and people realized that ability to just shift and keep going, having that digital HQ was really helpful.
In terms of retraining the team, did the team also lean into some of the enablement side of things, enablement and sales training side of things, to go, right, okay, like you said earlier, you know, we were always taught around how you meet someone, how you present yourself, how you look in the eye, and now we're doing it virtually, which is same but different. So was there also a retraining process for some of your sales team to sell effectively from home?
Yeah, there was. And I became part of, I know that a lot of businesses had like a COVID task force, or a team that kind of came together and said, how are we going to help our team? And we really, you know, lent in and said, here are our teaming agreements. Here's how we expect you to show up. You know, we always said, and I've always said to my team, I really love you to have your video on. There are some calls that we might have with each other or with a customer. There might be a walking, talking meeting and you don't need to have your video on, that's fine. But when we're actually presenting, or we're in a work group together, I really want you to have your video on. Now, I know some customers have said to me that they didn't talk about that type of thing, and people would always have their video off and people felt very disconnected. So yeah, I think we just set some ground rules with people and also gave them the ability to go, not every meeting has to be sitting in front of a screen and with your video on, but establish that and put that into the invite. And now, you know, I'm about to do September. I've already committed to customers and the team that I'm going to be doing walking meetings with anyone who agrees to do September with me. So, you know.
I love that. That's so cool.
Yeah, do it from anywhere.
It's funny you say that. I felt all inspired to do more walking meetings as a team. And so we have, once a month, we do what I learned this month, and we talk about something we've learned. And it's funny, I said to everyone, right, let's do it as a walking meeting if you want to. So I got all inspired, got everyone to go do it. And as soon as I got out walking, my internet and my 5G just absolutely would not have it. So I've made this whole massive dance about doing it, and then I could not from my mobile connect back in. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. I made this whole song and dance about it, and then I just literally could not get back on the line and had to text them and say, okay, I'm running back home, I'll be back online soon. So it was quite entertaining. Brave it again, though.
Oh, that's disappointing. Well, I haven't had that. And do you know what the other thing about this sort of this digital HQ and moving everything into places like Slack, like the reduction in my emails? I mean, we've got a whole bunch of stats, like it's about 42% email reduction when people are using Slack. But that, like, I remember how overwhelmed I felt about email before, you know, going into pandemic, and I didn't have it under control. And now, you know, there's some benefits as well of the new ways that we're working. Clearly not in your neighbourhood, the step challenge, but, you know, technology is affording us a lot of benefits when it comes to relationship building.
I agree. I absolutely agree. So I want to move away from, you know, I know we're all sort of probably sick to death of talking about the pandemic and sort of the sort of changes from COVID, and sort of look more future forward facing. big question for you. What is Salesforce predicting as some of the sort of key factors for the future of sales?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, automation, I think, brings more efficiency into the process. So, you know, now having voice and AI, you know, we're seeing a lot of salespeople using AI to inform and drive communication. So, you know, appropriate news updates or case studies or, you know, customer stories being sent through, the right level of communications, but also some predictability in your business. You know, I use Einstein to actually help me predict my forecast and really help me understand what's going on in my business beyond what my team tell me. And I think that automation means you can actually take a bit of the guesswork out. So I think we'll start to see more people recognize and understand the importance of having that automation in their field and inside sales teams.
Yeah. And you mentioned Einstein there. Can you, for anyone who's not familiar with Salesforce Einstein, can you just give us a 2-second rundown of what it is?
Yeah. So Einstein is our artificial intelligence layer that we bring into all of our products. And so I mentioned within our CRM, I use an Einstein layer to give me some support around pipe and forecast. It can actually give me, it takes into account all of the things like push count and, you know, days that the opportunity's been in pipe and all of those different factors, and starts to give you a bit of a health check on how your forecast is looking. But we also have it around, you know, email marketing and various other tools within the Salesforce suite. So it's our artificial intelligence layer, and we trademarked Einstein.
Yeah, it's such a good name.
Yeah.
And I love that it's becoming more accessible. You know, I mentioned I used to be at IBM, and when, like, years ago, when everyone's first sort of started talking about artificial intelligence, it felt so out of reach and from a price perspective so unattainable. Whereas now I think what I love, like with Einstein and tools like that, it actually makes it really within reach. So in terms of AI, sort of on that note, I know, yeah, the latest stats are showing high performance salespeople are 2.8 times more likely to use AI, which pretty much speaks for itself. But it can feel still, I think, quite overwhelming, daunting for some people. What are some of the first steps people can take on their AI journey if they're kind of listening to this going, oh, this sounds daunting, how do you get started?
Yeah, I mean, I think that as I said, like, just when we're sort of adopting new ways of selling, like having some confidence in things like that forecasting, you know, like just use it to have a look. Like initially I just sort of monitored what Einstein was saying about my forecast for a few quarters before I started to go, hang on a second, there's a bit of a trend here. Like my forecast is, you know, my manual forecast is actually not as accurate as my Einstein forecast. And so, you know, maybe there's something in that. So I think you can use it to monitor and report. But now I think our customers expect much more consistent and thoughtful communications from us. And so using Einstein to actually start to predict, like I said, like what kind of content do you want to send out to somebody? What sort of, you know, we call it journeys. I do think that's an overused word in our industry, but you know, when it comes to journeys, like what sort of journey do you want to put the customer on? What are they interested in knowing about? If it's, you know, if it's loyalty, how can you use Einstein to help send them the relevant communications or bring them into the relevant webinars or content, you know, activities to really give them the most relevant experience? We had a fantastic experience just this last week. We had a leadership offsite where we talked about the importance of mindset. I think right now, mindset is, you know, really appreciating that you, yes, there's all these macroeconomic factors right now that really are not within our individual control, but you have the ability to control your mindset and how you want to show up each day. So you can start your day thinking, this is a drag, going to have difficult conversations, or you can start your day thinking, you know what, I'm going to have to approach things differently. I'm going to have to talk to my customers about cost savings and cost out, and I'm going to have to really understand the economic pressures on their business. I need to change my language, but it's an opportunity for me to learn. It's an opportunity for me to have a different conversation. It's an opportunity for me to really know them and their business. But one of the wonderful things that happened while we were at this conference, this leadership offsite, was we each got an email in our inbox that was a thank you from our CEO, and it was completely customized to every single leader who was at this offsite. And I think there was at least 150 of us between Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane. And it was all about us. It was a thank you. And what does the leadership team, what does the executive team appreciate about Joe Gaines? And, you know, why are we grateful to have you on the leadership team? And that's one of the ways that technology and, you know, you can bring in that layer of artificial intelligence can help us all with our teams to help them feel more appreciated and understood. And, you know, don't make it generic, make it really special and unique.
Yeah, it's so interesting to say that. I even had a very basic level this morning. I got an email, dear valued customer, and I'm like, no. I don't think in the year 2022 you can do that. And if I was a valued customer, you would use the first name.
You didn't know my name.
So basic. And I think we've all just got such a low tolerance of, I don't want to be sent information about stuff that isn't relevant to me. You know, it's exactly like you said before, we want to be receiving stuff that is exactly meeting us where we're at, with what we're interested in, with what we've engaged in. And that, you know, so much of, we've just done so much research on the future of sales, and so much of it is that really, really hyper personalized, which you can only do if you're leveraging tools like Einstein and tools like AI and automation, because you can't hyper-personalize on a grand scale. And the only alternative is to call everyone dear valued customer, which I did not feel that.
Exactly. Oh, it's terrible, isn't it? I can't believe that still happens.
I know. I was very upset about it.
Yeah.
So, and I'm going to tap back into the marketing piece, sales and marketing piece, in a minute. But before I do, I'm kind of interested to build on what we were just talking there around some of the sales team. And I think what's really interesting is how, you know, we used to very much look at sales as intuition-based sales and my gut feel and my experience tells me. And now actually it's what you've just been talking to, which is more becoming a time of data-driven sales. And, you know, we've heard for donkeys about data-driven marketing. We've not necessarily, I don't perceive we've heard as much about data-driven sales. But that, and this is, you know, saying this to a CRM company, that data is only as good as the data you put into it. And so, you know, what we're starting to see with our customers is there's no lack of data. There's lack of ability to do something meaningful with that data and make sense of it. Yeah. How are you seeing businesses address that challenge?
Well, I think it's, as you say, like there's many, many different sources of data or data. And I think that businesses have historically been quite siloed. You know, there'll be data that the marketing department has and data that the sales team has and data that the, you know, the back office and the fins team have. It's about getting that whole, you know, collective view. and not just one element. And so when we talk to customers, and there are some customers doing an amazing job, like RM Williams is a great customer of ours in the retail space, who has really gone, you know what, we know you bought those boots and you may not know that we've got this shirt and this belt. And so they're actually starting to make recommendations. And I was interviewing someone for a sales role the other day, and he cited his experience with RM Williams. And he said, you know, the kind of experience I'm looking for as a customer is the one that I get from RM Williams. You know, I had no idea about their range of belts and shirts. I've always worn their shoes. And if you look around the Salesforce sales team, there's a lot of RM Williams boots around. So, you know, being able to sort of cross-sell, upsell, but also knowing if I have a service ticket, if I'm getting something repaired or I've got an issue with something or there's an outstanding invoice for some reason, don't then try and cross-sell, upsell me. Like, actually understand that I'm in a different frame of mind with you right now. I want you to solve for my problem. I want you to appreciate that maybe I'm a little bit unhappy. And so there's a different way that you should communicate with me when I'm online or I'm in store or, you know, wherever you see me. So even that, you know, connecting up the digital and the physical, not thinking of them as different channels, thinking of them as all one experience with the customer, because that's how we all, you know, and that's what our customers expect from us. And I'm not saying we're perfect at it, but customers certainly expect us to know that they've been to that event or they've read that piece of content or they've, you know, they're in whatever stage of their sales cycle or they might be going through a renewal. They certainly expect us to know all of that when we're communicating with them.
Yeah. And I just don't think you can get away with it anymore when I always think of it as the historic experience I used to feel I used to get with banks, when you phone up and you just feel like someone has no idea what your history is with them and you're having to kind of then repeat yourself 10 times and you're kind of the frustration because you're like, you should know this. You should have it in front of you that I have a ABC product or I've been a customer for X amount of time or this is what it is. And it's almost that feeling that you're starting from scratch every conversation. And I think my perception is we have zero patience for that anymore, whether it's B2B or B2C, doesn't matter. It's none of us have patience for that. And it's not a personalized or positive customer experience.
Absolutely. And appreciate me. I mean, we have this wonderful person in our business called Brian Solis, and he's a digital anthropologist and futurist. And I love the way that he talks about customer satisfaction and loyalty in terms of the love languages. This really resonates with me. So not assuming that we all like to be appreciated in the same way. Some of us like acts of service. Some of us like gifts. Some of us like words of affirmation. You know, as customers, don't treat us all the same. I talked about, you know, Myers-Briggs profiling with my team recently, and we don't all, like I said, get our energy from being together all the time. Like, understand that we're all different, so you can't treat us all the same. And speaking of banks, my bank recently sent me a $200 gift voucher and said, thank you for being such a great home loan customer. We love having you and we'd like you to buy yourself a home appliance with this voucher so that, you know, you've got, and I'm like, yeah, I'm a trophy person. I want a trophy. I want recognition. You know, I've got this little lemon juicer on my bench that I bought with my voucher from my bank. That's like a trophy and a token of my custom and that they care about me. So that matters to me, but it may not matter to you, Abby.
I want to find out offline which bank you're with and I'm changing. I did not get a lemon juicer. It's funny, I had a really good personal one the other day. Our real estate agent sent us a card in the post, handwritten card, saying, happy anniversary. It's been 4 years since you bought your home. You know, hope you're enjoying it. If you ever have any needs in the future, you know, reach out. Here we are. Put one of their cards in. But really nice handwritten happy anniversary card. And I was like, oh, that is, I didn't even realize it'd been 4 years since we bought the house. I was like, that is good. That is really, really good. I like that.
Isn't it? And it's not like there's no sort of closing or presumptive anything happening. It's really like recognizing something that's important to you, not important to them.
Yeah. And it's interesting you said about the love languages. I actually posted on LinkedIn about that earlier this week, because I was reminded, I was mentoring someone and they were saying about what do I do to motivate my team? And I was talking about us all being motivated differently. And I was reminded of the love languages test. And we've all just been, we did it a while ago, but we've got new team members. So we just did it again as a team. And it's such an eye opener to see how, like, do your team want to be acknowledged, rewarded? What is it for them? So love languages test, brilliant one.
Yeah, it's so good. And also, like you said, anniversaries, like, I think remembering those moments for people that matter in their lives, their birthdays, their anniversary with an organization, you know, like significant things, that's meaningful to customers as well.
Yeah, I agree. So this brings me really nicely onto what I've been dying to ask you, which is around sales and marketing. So, you know, Sales Redefined, we're all about how do we bring together sales and marketing? And we use the word smarketing because we sort of say the two should, you know, together and in alignment, and we joke that we're the marriage counselors to sales and marketing. Now, I know obviously you mentioned earlier you've got the leadership experience in both sales, marketing. You've sat, you know, both sides of the fence, and I actually use Salesforce. I genuinely do use Salesforce quite often as an example of great, you know, ability to bring together sales and marketing. Like when I've engaged with one of your webinars or I've engaged with your state of sales report that I get excited about or whatever it is, I always have a fantastic experience of aligned sales and marketing. And I always, you know, use you guys as a great example. Can you talk to us a little bit about that, about how you bring together sales and marketing?
Yeah, this is a really good one. And something I feel excited to talk about because of my background, because I have led both sales and marketing teams. And we recently ran an event in Melbourne called our Retail and Consumer Goods Summit. And we were hoping that we would get about 400 people come along, and we had just under 600 come along, which was great. You know, in Melbourne, in a challenging time, we know that people are having mixed reactions to going to events, being around that many people. And in the lead up to the event, I have a counterpart in marketing, and I'd suggested to him that we do a daily check-in every morning on the event, on who was speaking, on the content, all of those things. And that the alignment that created, the excitement that created in the team around, you know, we're in this together. It's not marketing kind of, you know, chasing sales to do what they need them to do. We had to close down registrations for the first time at Salesforce in Australia because we were oversubscribed. So we just weren't sure we could fit everyone into the venue. And it was such a wonderful partnership because it didn't leave anything to chance. You know, we were ahead of the game. So I think really coordinating and understanding that, you know, we're in it together. It's not sort of one or the other, and there's no blame game. Like, you know, that's really important. But I talked about this before, the importance of pipeline. Like pipe is what connects sales and marketing together. And it helps us with, you know, our forecasting. It helps us with collaboration. It means that the marketing team know where we're focusing our energy, on what and on who. So that, and transparency in that is really important. But sales and marketing should be working together to progress the pipeline, to really make sure that we're talking to the right people again at the right time, and how they want to be spoken to and what they want to see. And it's also important that sales keep marketing up to date on how, you know, a customer's feeling and what's going on with an opportunity, and marketing as well need to stay up to date. You know, we're finding that events around industries are people want to hear more than more generic sort of product or, you know, sort of technology events. And so our marketers as well need to keep up to speed with what's going on with trends in the industry that we're in. You know, what are the things that are affecting retailers? We have a partnership with the Australian Retail Association. And so getting them to tell us what's going on in the industry, what, you know, what are you hearing from customers? Because they represent them. So, yeah, this is one I'm so passionate about because they're both so important and they're both so interdependent.
I know, I could do a whole podcast topic just on this one conversation. At a practical level on a day-to-day basis, you know, you gave a great example there of when there's an event on the go, you were speaking daily, you were in sort of regular communication. Sort of outside of that, when you don't have an event on the go, how do you make sure there's that continued alignment? Is it weekly calls? Is it shared KPIs? You know, I saw a recent study, this wasn't a Salesforce one, but a recent one I read was 9 out of 10 sales and marketing professionals didn't feel their company had an alignment between KPIs, cultures, and only 1/3 of them even communicated regularly. And we notice it because day one, when we work with the customer, we'll have a briefing call with sales and we'll have a briefing call with marketing. And I guarantee you they are different industries, different custom avatars, different everything. So we really, really see it. So a practical sort of day-to-day level, how do you do some of the basics to get that alignment?
Well, you know, so even in within my leadership team, I have a marketing partner is part of my leadership team, even though they report into the marketing organization. They're part of the team. They're involved in deal reviews and pipe reviews. They are using data to drive their decisions as well, data that we're getting from customers. And we know that the buying journey isn't linear. It's not, you know, it's no longer that person looked at this bit of content and so therefore they're interested in X. It doesn't work like that anymore. The journey is complicated. And even though someone's not buying now, they might be buying in the future. So how do you, you know, how do sales and marketing work together to keep our brand and our solution and our abilities top of mind? And, you know, marketing play a key role there of nurturing a relationship with a customer. And so they have to be in our deal reviews, they have to be in our forecast reviews, they have to know what's top of mind right now and through my long range plan. You know, I'm long range plan through to FY26. They need to know what does next year look like, what does the year after look like, you know, how can they play a role. So I don't think you can separate the two. Of course there's different motions within them. But you have to have that alignment, meetings, reports, deal reviews. They have to be in all of it with you.
Yeah, I love that. And I love you mentioned there around the nurture process as well. We see that as probably one of the biggest missed opportunities because it's almost like, oh, no, they've not engaged in a few months or they've not engaged in the last few emails. Boom, that's it. And, you know, I'll always, when I'm presenting, I'll say to people, hey, what's your longest customer sales cycle been? And we have people go, you know, 3 years, 5 years, 12 years. And you go, well, exactly. Mm. You know, that's for some of us in some industries, that's the sales cycle. And so actually, you know, you can't just nurture for 2-3 weeks and that's it. It is that really long-term game in terms of nurturing. So I love that you touched on that because I'd say that's one of the things that we see as sort of low-hanging fruit and a missed opportunity. Mm.
Especially right now, you know, there's a lot of sort of hesitancy, skepticism, I think, from some customers, definitely in the retail and consumer goods space around when and how. I mean, this is the time to double down on technology, right? This is the time to use data to drive your decisions. This is the time to be really specific and really, you know, focused. But there are going to be some people that go, not now, but in the future. And so how you've made them feel in the process, in that lead up to the future, is going to determine what happens when they're ready. And you know, this is a little bit crass, but I had an old boss who used to say, you know, if you get an RFP and you weren't, no, I've got it wrong. If it's like you get an RFP 9 months after the fact, it's sort of like having a baby. If baby arrives and you weren't there 9 months earlier, then it's not yours. And it's the same thing, you know, in selling. I totally screwed up that whole quote, but it's essentially, if you weren't there 9 months ago, then it's not yours.
I like that.
You know, you have to nurture the relationship.
I love that. I'm totally using that. I always use analogies around dating. I always consider sales as like dating, and how do you not get married on the first date? And if you have a great first date, how do you have a second date? So now the baby making one, I'm gonna use that for sure.
Yeah, with the RFP. You weren't there 9 months ago, it's not yours. So yeah,
That's made my day. I'm conscious I haven't got you for too much longer and conscious of your time, but I want to ask you a couple of quick fire questions. So first one, a bit of a big question, but I've got to get your take on it because I ask every guest this. What do you think it takes to be a high performance salesperson? What are some of the key traits or attributes of high performance salespeople?
I have loved this one book for a long, long time, and it's called The Slight Edge. And it is about the small things that you do with consistency over time to get to an outcome. So I know a lot of the times now as humans, we're all looking for quick fixes, but it's what are you going to take out of your day, or what are you going to start doing? And even if it's just for 5 minutes a day, or it's just, you know, I'm not going to eat that chocolate, or I'm going to drink an extra liter of water, or whatever it is, it's the small things that you do, that compounding interest. So how are you going to change in order to get to a different outcome? We have this process at Salesforce that's called the V2 Mum, which is where we publish so V2 is the vision and values. And then MUM is MOM, which is methods, obstacles, and metrics or measures. And we all publish that. Mark Benioff and Brett, our co-CEOs, they publish theirs, and everyone can see them. And everyone has one. Every single person working at Salesforce has one. You can go into our CRM and see your V2 MUM, and you do a quarterly check-in. But I have always said to my team, yes, you've got your V2 MUM and you've got your goals in there, but what you need to think about is how you're going to get there. What are you going to change? What are the small things that you do over the year to actually get to that outcome? And how are you going to change? You've got to change today if you want to get to that tomorrow. Don't go into things doing them the way you've always done them and expect a different outcome. So, discipline, rigor, but don't overboil the ocean. Don't try to eat the elephant whole, all of that stuff. Like, just start small.
I love that. I'm a real book junkie. So I will be ordering that book. And I'm a massive fan of James Clear with Atomic Habits and very much those one percenters, start small, tiny things. So it sounds as if it's a similar train of thought.
Yes. Yeah. It's not it's by no means revolutionary or groundbreaking. You'll probably read it and go, yep, I know this, but it's written so well, so accessibly, that I always recommend it.
Okay, I'm going to be getting that one. And then finally, you know, for you, on a note of your career, you know, you've built an incredible career, and, you know, congratulations. I was looking at your LinkedIn, I was like, wow, that is a huge, huge, huge career. What do you think has helped you yourself on your high performance, like play a high performance game or play on your A game, however you want to perceive it? Would you say it's the same thing, or are there other things that you would sort of attribute to how you've helped, you know, build a successful career?
So I think, like most people, I didn't leave school thinking I want to work in sales for the rest of my life.
Nobody does.
And no, but I did. I started my career at KFC as a teenager, and I think that was the best grounding, because I was a rare female. I could cook, clean, and serve. I was the trifecta, and we used to do competitions actually, and travel around to different stores and compete. And that was great grounding for selling and being a great salesperson and understanding the customer. And I've always been a storyteller and a writer. I need to publish something one day. But the art of storytelling, so I've always loved sort of weaving a yarn, telling a story. And I always wanted to be a writer, always wanted to be a journalist. I fell into sales as an advertising coordinator for a magazine company and just realized that actually selling is storytelling. Selling is listening, learning, being able to articulate things in a way that people can understand. And I get to do that every day. It's such a wonderful thing. You know, you shouldn't feel like you're selling. You should feel like you're building relationships and really helping people. And so that's how I got to where I am. And I think that that's part of my secret sauce that I've only really begun to appreciate as I've got older, that storytelling, be relatable, be believable, be honest and open and share a bit of yourself, be vulnerable, tell people the trials and tribulations you've had to go through to get to where you are. This hasn't been easy. I've worked really hard and I've certainly had my share of challenges along the way. So yeah, hope that answers the question.
I love that. That is one of the best answers. I love that. So final question before we let you go, on with your day. Any other book recommendations? This is my final question I ask everyone, and I think it's a selfish question because I love books. Any other book recommendations that you think have had a big influence on you or, they're your one that you always recommend? Or is it just The Slight Edge that we all need to go in order?
The Slight Edge, Radical Candor is another one. There's so many that, Stephen Covey's books, there's so many that I've read along the way that have really helped form my thinking. And I think like you, I'm a voracious reader. So I read my fair share of novels as well. And I just love the escapism that you can get and podcasts, the ability now to go on a walk and listen to a great podcast, whether that's, a Glennon Doyle podcast, or I'm listening to Paul Zara from the ARA tell me what's going on in retail. It's a great way to learn. So, yeah.
Love that. Well, Jo, you have been absolutely incredible. Thank you so much for coming on. We'll pop your LinkedIn details in the show notes and obviously Salesforce details in the show notes so that if anyone wants to reach out and connect with you, they can do so. But thank you so much. You have been incredible. I've got so many notes and nuggets of gold from that one. So thank you so much, Jo.
Absolutely, Abby. So pleased to be here with you and thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you for tuning in. If you'd like to receive the inside scoop on what is working right now in our highest performing campaigns, and likewise, what are the pitfalls to avoid directly to your inbox, then simply visit insidescoop.salesredefined.com.au to make sure that you receive our fortnightly newsletter with everything that you need to know to stay ahead of the pack directly to your inbox. And finally, before you leave us, don't forget to subscribe to Redefining Sales podcast so that you never miss an episode. And if you enjoyed it, we would really, really appreciate it if you could leave us a comment or perhaps share it with a friend or colleague who you know would enjoy it. We'll see you next time.